science, learning, business, community, you. Welcome to Think Works, the podcast for people who like to think. Because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello, and welcome to ThinkWorks, the place where we do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And this week is part two of our three-part Philosophy 101. Now, if you remember last week, we talked about the ship of Theseus, which is all about the sense of identity. We also did the cave of Plato, which was all about reality. And then we finished last week with I Think, Therefore I Am, which is all about consciousness and self-awareness. Now, this week, I'm going to continue the theme with two other well-known Western philosophical questions. Keep tuned to the end of this podcast, because I want to talk about the Eastern block of philosophies in a separate episode, but I'll explain what I mean by that later. So the two that I want to consider today, or in this episode, I should say, are the trolley problem, which tackles ethical issues, and also the moral philosophy of utilitarianism, which was first put forward by Don Stuart Mill. The trolley problem is a moral dilemma that questions whether you should take an action that will result in the death of one person to save multiple others. It explores utilitarianism, which we're going to discuss in more detail in a few minutes, and the ethics of sacrifice and moral decision making. So in lay terms, let's just imagine you've got a runaway trolley heading towards five people. You have the power to switch the track, redirecting the trolley to kill one person instead. What do you do? So the choice is between one or five. The trolley problem, therefore, it's a thought experiment in ethics and moral psychology, and it was originally introduced by philosopher Philippa Foot in 1967. It has since become a central point of discussion in ethical theory, particularly in exploring utilitarian versus deontological perspectives. And the problem which presents this scenario about the runaway trolley heading towards five people tied up on the tracks is you are the person that is actually in control. You are standing next to a lever that can divert the trolley onto another track where only one person is tied up. The ethical dilemma revolves around whether it is morally permissible to pull the lever and sacrifice one person to save five. In other words, if you don't act, the five are definitely going to die. That is the original intention of whoever set the trolley running away. But the dilemma is, if you can change that course, if you can actually pull the lever that saves the five, but it sacrifices the one, are you within your rights to do that? Now, the utilitarian approach, founded by Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill, suggests that the right action is the one that maximizes overall happiness or utility. In other words, according to this perspective, pulling the lever is the ethical choice because it results in the greatest good for the greatest number. By sacrificing one life to save five, you are minimizing the overall harm and maximizing the well-being of the other five. The deontological perspective, in contrast, it's expounded by Immanuel Kant, argues that the morality of an action is based on whether it adheres to certain rules or duties. From that standpoint, actively diverting the trolley makes you directly responsible for the death of the one person on the alternate track. And this action can be seen as morally impermissible because it involves making a choice to harm an individual, violating the duty not to harm others. There's also, within this, the doctrine of double effect to consider, and this is often discussed in the context of just war theory and medical ethics, but it provides another lens through which to view the trolley problem. So this doctrine asserts that it's morally permissible to perform an action that is both good but also has bad effects, as long as the bad effect is a means, is not the means to the good end, and the intention is to bring about the good effect. So applying this to the trolley problem, one could argue that if your intention is to save the five people and not to kill the one person, pulling the lever could be seen as ethically permissible. Now, of course, you are going to kill the one person, but you are intending to save the five. Now, there are variations and extensions to this. So the trolley problem has got these complicated sets of ethical analysis that have been done over the last few decades. One such variation is known as the fat man scenario, and this was proposed by Judith Jarvis Thompson. And this involves pushing a large man off a bridge to stop the trolley and save the five people. Now, this scenario often elicits a different moral intuition compared to the original version because it highlights the complexity of human moral reasoning. What is the difference between pulling the lever and diverting the train so it kills one person, or pushing someone off a bridge, which would also kill them, to save the five people and the sixth person on the other track? Now, the real world implications of all this is it's got practical implications in areas such as autonomous vehicle programming, medical decision making, public policy. For example, should an autonomous car be programmed to react in a situation where an accident is unavoidable and it must choose between the lives of its passengers or the pedestrians? And these real-world applications of the trolley problem forces to confront our ethical principles and how they should guide decision-making in critical situations. And it would be really fascinating, I think, to find out what, how and when these kind of ethical programming considerations are being put into self-driving cars, which are only around the corner. No pun intended. And then you've got psychological insights as well. So interestingly, the trolley problem provides insights into human psychology and moral reasoning, because the studies have shown that people's responses can vary significantly depending on how the problem is framed or presented. And that indicates that our moral intuitions are indeed influenced by emotions, cognitive biasness, and contextual factors. So in summary then, the trolley problem is a powerful tool for exploring ethical dilemmas, and it highlights the tension between consequentialist and deontological theories and probes these intricacies of moral decision making that we just get challenged all the time with, because it does make us consider the principles that guide our actions and what the implications of our choices are under morally complex circumstances. Now, we mentioned utilitarianism, and this is the fifth area that I want to consider, or the second one for today. Now, utilitarianism is the idea that the best action is the one that maximizes happiness or well-being for the greatest number of people. It's the form of consequentialism that states that the outcomes of an action determine its moral value. So in lay terms, if you're faced with a tough decision, choose the option that brings the most happiness or least harm to the largest number of people. Now, utilitarianism is a normative ethical theory most closely associated with the philosopher John Stuart Mill. Its origins can be traced back to Jeremy Bentham. And utilitarianism evaluates that moral worth of actions based on their outcomes, basically. So specifically focuses in on maximizing happiness and minimizing suffering. John Stuart Mill refined Bentham's ideas and emphasized the qualitative differences in pleasures. So first of all, we have to look at this in terms of the principle of utility. At the heart of utilitarianism is the principle of utility, which is also known as the greatest happiness principle. This principle posits that actions are right insofar as they tend to promote happiness, and wrong as they tend to produce the reverse of happiness. So happiness in this context is defined as pleasure and the absence of pain, where unhappiness is defined as pain and the deprivation of pleasure. You also need to consider within this the higher and lower pleasures. So John Stuart Mill introduced a critical distinction in his version of utilitarianism between higher and lower pleasures. Higher pleasures, he said, refer to intellectual and moral satisfaction, such as engaging in philosophical discourse, enjoying art, or helping others. Lower pleasures relate to more bodily or sensual gratification, like eating or resting. And Mills argued that higher pleasures are superior and more valuable than lower pleasures, and that this therefore proposes that the quality of pleasure is as important as the quantity. Now, there are a few other areas that we need to consider when we look at utilitarianism. And we're going to just quickly run through some of those now. So we got the hedonic calculus area to consider. So this was originally proposed by Bentham, and the concept of a hedonic calculus influences Mill's thinking. This method attempts to quantify happiness by considering the various factors such as intensity, duration, certainty, proximity, purity, and the extent of the pleasures and pains resulting from a specific action. Mill's contributions refine this approach by emphasizing the qualitative rather than merely quantitative assessments. This is not the kind of discussion to have if you've had a few drinks, because I'm struggling to get the various combinations of vowels and consonants out as it is. But bear with me and we'll see if we can refine it as we go along. So we also need to look at justice and right. So a common criticism of utilitarianism is that it could justify actions that are unjust, or they violate individual rights if those actions result in the greater overall good. Now, Mill addressed this concern by arguing that utilitarian principles inherently support justice and individual rights. He contended that security and justice are essential components of happiness, so any system of utilitarian ethics must protect those values to ensure long-term societal well-being. You also need to look at the idea of rule utilitarianism. And now, this is the area that John Stuart Mill is most closely associated with, because it suggests that the morality of an action should be evaluated based on whether it adheres to rules that in general tend to promote the greatest good. And this contrasts with ACT utilitarianism, which evaluates each action individually. Rule utilitarianism helps address some criticisms about the potential permissiveness of ACT utilitarianism by emphasizing consistent and impartial moral rules designed to yield those best outcomes overall. In terms of influence and applications, it has a profound impact on various fields, and real-world applications are many. It's influenced public policy, economics, management, healthcare, legal systems even, by providing a framework for evaluating the consequences of actions and decisions. So, for instance, cost-benefit analysis in policymaking often draws on utilitarianism to assess the outcomes of different courses of action. Modern debates on animal rights, environmental ethics, global poverty, and bioethics frequently invoke utilitarian principles to argue for policies that seek to maximize well-being and minimize suffering. Scholars and ethicists continue to refine and challenge utilitarian ethics, seeking solutions for its practical application whilst addressing complex moral issues. So in summary, John Stuart Mill's utilitarianism presents a sophisticated ethical framework that emphasizes the maximization of happiness and the minimization of suffering. And by distinguishing between higher and lower pleasures and advocating for justice and individual rights and proposing rule-based assessments, Mill's contributions have shaped moral philosophy and continue to influence contemporary ethical thought and practice, particularly here in the West. The next episode of ThinkWorks is going to go and after the big one, the meaning of life. The entire episode is going to be devoted to that. But I wanted to just draw a line on why we're only at the moment considering Western philosophies. There's a real reason for it, because the Eastern set of philosophies, bound up as they are in different religious and spiritual, especially spiritual movements like Buddhism, I didn't feel like I knew enough about them to really do an episode yet. I'm researching like mad, and we will do a special return to Philosophy 101 on Eastern and Asian philosophies later in this series. So let me just have another few weeks of doing other stuff, and then we'll come back to that, because by then I should have my head around it all. But one thing that I do know, and that I can draw a real distinction between Western and Eastern philosophies, is Western philosophies tend to be about the individual and the individual's rights or the individual's moral decisions, whereas the Eastern and Asian philosophies tend to be more about the collective, about groups, about society. And it's a really interesting distinction to make. So bear with me on that, because I'm definitely going to be coming back to those Eastern and Asian philosophies. I just felt like I needed a bit more time to get my head around them, so I hope that makes sense. Now, as I said, next week I'm back with episode 24 of ThinkWorks, part 3 of Philosophy 101, and we're going to tackle the big one, the meaning of life. In other words, what is the meaning of life? And no, it's not 42. I'll explain more about that reference as well. In the meantime, everyone, please stay safe. Keep on thinking. More importantly, just keep thinking and asking questions. Believe me when I say there is no such thing as a stupid question, and anyone that tells you that that is a stupid question doesn't want to answer the question or doesn't want to be asked questions. And that is where we are being pushed all the time now by people in charge. We need to ask questions. We need to explore what everyone in power is doing, whether that's our managers, whether it's the governments, whether it's corporations. It doesn't really matter. We need to be starting to ask the questions that hold these people to account. And if we don't ask the questions and we don't find out what is going on and why it's going on the way it is, then really we have no right then to argue with the consequences further down the line. So stick with me here on ThinkWorks. We've got some great shows coming up. But in the meantime, I'll see you next week for the third and final part of Philosophy 101, The Meaning of Life. And I'm really looking forward to that. In the meantime, I nearly forgot again. Come and join me in the ThinkWorks forum. Well, there'll be a post to discuss what we've done here on Philosophy 101, both from last week and this week, so you can add your comments and your own debating points, and we'll have a fun-based discussion. I don't want trolls. I don't want people to come back and just start arguing just for the sake of arguing. I don't mind debates. We respect one another's views. We put our own views across and we have point and counterpoint. That's how we should be going forward, not in the way that we have been in the last decade or so. So thanks everyone for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I'll see you all next week.
To find out more or join in with the conversation, our forum has a corresponding post for you to comment in. Simply go to darreninform.com/thinkworksforum and join in the fun. Or you can join the Facebook page by searching for at @darreninform for news, tips and other helpful strategies. The show was hosted by Darren Smithson and the music is by Alexander Nakarada. You have been listening to ThinkWorks, the podcast for thinkers.